WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Singing freedom, freedom.
On Thursday of next week, April 7th, I'll be moderating another First Principles debate between Demos and the Ayn Rand Institute. The topic this time will be freedom. Thank you, Richie Havens. For whom and from what? For example, freedom from worry about getting health insurance versus freedom to not buy a policy. Ronald Reagan and Martin Luther King both invoked the word freedom, but in such different ways. Free tickets are now available through our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, and also on the site, we're collecting your favorite quotes about freedom. We've got lots of great ones already posted. I'll give you three. I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachments of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpation. James Madison said that. Sigmund Freud said this: most people do not really want freedom because freedom involves responsibility, and most people are frightened of responsibility. And none are more hopelessly enslaved than those who falsely believe they are free. Goethe. Share your favorite quote about freedom and read the ones that everyone else has posted at itsafreecountry.org, and you can reserve your free tickets to the freedom debate for Thursday night, April 7th at itsafreecountry.org. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So Forest City Ratner is pursuing plans to go prefab at Atlantic Yards. They've worked on a plan to build a 34-story, 400-unit residential tower at the controversial Atlantic Yard site. It would be the tallest prefabricated steel structure in the world. Modular construction like this has gained popularity in recent years, but it's untested at this height. This is where they build the skyscraper piecemeal off-site and then bolt those pieces together at the very end. It would cut construction costs just about in half, but also would cut unionized construction workers out of many of the jobs that were originally promised. Charles Bagley joins me now. He's the reporter at the New York Times who's been covering the many twists in this troubled development project. We're also joined by Asim Inam, a professor of urbanism at Parsons, the New School of Design, to explain how prefab construction works and if it's the wave of the future. Welcome, Charles. Welcome, Asim.
Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
So, Charles Bagley, you discovered this new plan to go prefab. What exactly are they considering here and for which part of the Atlantic Yards project?
Well, as you know, the steel is already rising for the arena, but there is another part of the project that people were promised, and that is 6,300-some units of housing, at least 30% of which would be for poor working-class and even middle-class New Yorkers. They would be subsidized apartments. Now, Ratner has had a difficult time getting the financing for even the first of those residential buildings. And so in the course of sort of scrambling around, he came upon this idea of doing a modular building as a way of cutting down his labor costs, his construction costs, and getting and making good on his promise to build housing. But it presents a number of challenges, both technology-wise and, on the other hand, this project was supposed to provide thousands and thousands of construction jobs. This is one of the reasons why the state and the city agreed to provide the project with about $300 million in direct subsidies.
Yeah, I think the original promise was upwards of 17,000 union construction jobs. Do you know, Charles, how many fewer workers would be required for prefab?
Well, it's hard to say, but it would be substantially fewer. The 17,000 jobs is really, you know, they add every year so many thousands of jobs, and it all adds up to 17,000. The actual number of workers on the site at any one time is considerably less. And in the beginning, you know, you've got, you might have concrete workers, and then later you have carpenters or whatever. But right here, it's going to be a drastic reduction in the number of people.
And they would tend to be non-union, less skilled workers, making less money per worker in this configuration?
Well, not necessarily non-union. There's a prefab plant or a modular home builder in the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and that has, the carpenters union is there, but the rate of pay is much lower in a factory than it is out in on a construction site. You know, you're talking maybe $34 an hour in wages and benefits versus $84 in wages and benefits. So it's a big drop. Now, I know that the Ratner team has looked at a variety of ways of doing this. One is to do that sort of factory shop rate. Another is to mix it, have a mix of workers. Some would be on-site carpenters or you know, construction workers getting somewhere in the neighborhood of $80 an hour, and then a bunch of factory workers. They have not looked at, you know, just doing it all, you know, on-site
right
construction rate.
Well, this is a good place to bring in Professor Enom. Professor, when we hear the term prefab, it sounds practically fake. You know, it's like Velveeta cheese or Spam, the luncheon meat, not the email, and it seems cheap and unsafe. What are we actually talking about when we talk about prefab apartment buildings?
That's a very good question, because actually in the United States, prefab has been around for a very long time, including in high-rises. In fact, one of the first skyscrapers to be built with prefab elements was the Empire State Building. And that's one of the reasons it got built very quickly and, in fact, under budget. The most famous prefab multi-story apartment building is from 1976 in Montreal, called Habitat 76, which is now 35 years old. And so the question becomes, like you said, why has it not caught on? And one of the reasons is because of a certain stigma to it, that in terms of people wanting to actually live there. The other reason has been about cost and infrastructure, which has improved quite a bit. So I think one has to be very cautious not to obsess only with the technology, but the design of it, both in terms of the people who will live there and the neighborhood.
You said Empire State Building, but skyscrapers with prefab construction as we know it today is very unusual. The tallest one, as according to what I've read, is a 25-story dormitory in England that was built last year in less than 12 months. This would be 34 stories. So are there structural concerns with prefab skyscrapers?
Yes. Let me clarify, because there's a lot of things that go under prefab. What we are really talking about, to be very specific, at Atlantic Yards is modular. And so under prefab, there's manufactured homes. So a lot of homes in the United States are actually manufactured in factories and then put on site. Those are single-family homes. In fact, a lot of upscale homes are manufactured in sections put together. Now, the reason that has worked so well is those manufactured homes look traditional. So people don't even know those are manufactured.
Mm-hmm.
And here, so what we're talking about is modular, and you're right, the tallest one is England. And that's a very good example, because actually it's a student dormitory. And so the question of who's going to live there and what's the neighborhood like, I think really needs to be thought about.
Can you make a good-looking prefab skyscraper that works well with the surrounding urban landscape, in your opinion?
You can, but it's not been done yet. And one of the reasons is the obsession with cost and technology, which is legitimate, is at the cost of the design. So, for example, the student dorm, if you think about it, they're not really going to protest not wanting to live in the dorm. They have no choice. So a good analogy is there's been a lot of proposals for buildings made out of shipping containers. even if you make it as pretty as you want, it's still a shipping container. And a lot of people don't want to live in shipping containers. And so that's the thing one has to be very careful about.
So I guess that's part of the question, Charles, politically, is who trusts Bruce Ratner to be the first person to build an aesthetically pleasing prefab tower that fits in with the urban landscape?
Well, he definitely up to this point has not scored a lot of points on aesthetics. Mr. Gehry, the world-famous architect that started with the project, of course, is gone now. And his arena was redesigned by another firm. In the abstract, the notion of building prefab, or modular housing, is a good one because we're going to need more housing, and theoretically, it could be more cost-effective. But I also wonder, as you were talking about the dormitory in England, I see how the steel frame system works for dormitories or maybe even for one-bedroom apartments. But how do you start building two- and three-bedroom apartments with that? It really complicates the logistics, I would imagine.
Charles Bagley, New York Times reporter covering the Atlantic Yards project, and Asim Enam, professor of urbanism at Parsons, the New School of Design, as we talk about the developer's new plan to use prefab apartment building modules to save money on a 34-story apartment tower. And it just so happens, Charles, that we had the HPD commissioner, Rafael Sestero, on last hour. And so we asked him this question: should the city recalculate the amount of public subsidy that the Atlantic Yards project is getting now that Ratner, or if Ratner firmly decides to cut the construction costs from what everybody expected by using prefabs? And here was his response.
We would evaluate it at the right time. I mean, our subsidy numbers are constantly evaluated in any deal that we're negotiating right up until the moment we close. And if costs come down and we're able to shift resources, then we'll do that. But we'll make that evaluation at the time. And at this point, we don't have specific numbers on Tower 2 in the Forest City plan to make that determination.
So, Charles, that was an interesting answer to me because he did almost promise that reevaluation would be done if, you know, the finances of the project seemed to change. Can the city reevaluate subsidy amounts?
Well, we're talking about a couple different kinds of subsidies. The cash subsidy of $300 million from the state and the city has already been delivered. That's already been spent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they would get that back. What Raphael was talking about is the per unit subsidy for apartments that are earmarked specifically for
affordable
poor
housing,
working class or middle class,
right,
New Yorkers. And you know, they have an allocation. It's the same for every developer. At Atlantic Yards, Mr. Ratner has tried to get an additional sum of money to make his project work financially, and the city has turned him down. Who knows what will happen in the future. He does have deadlines. The first building has to be started by, 2013. They had told us earlier that they would start it by this time. Of course, the date has come and gone. And now they're talking about starting the first residential building by the end of the year. But I think that's really still up in the air.
Here is, I think, an architect who's a fan of prefab calling in. Hi, I'm in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I don't know if I'm a fan of prefab, but I'm certainly not a fan of the systems that we use to build today, exclusive of prefab. And I think if this is looked upon as an opportunity to build an industry and also build perhaps some more modest wage union jobs and possibly even a business for our region that exports and doesn't just build on site at $85 an hour.
Right. It's really an interesting global thought on the impact of, if this is acceptable, the positive impact it could have on our economy. Professor Enam, do you see that kind of potential?
Not quite. I don't think it's very obvious. First of all, one of the most biggest costs of modular, which is what we're talking about, is a transportation. So where the factory is located, and they're talking about locating it in Long Island, there's a limitation of how far they can supply those modular units. The other thing is, in terms of modest wage union jobs, I understand where the union is coming from. And one way of looking at it is the construction industry is changing in terms of cost and technology. And so one of the things the union might consider, and they might be also already considering, is actually training the union members for these new kinds of jobs. Mm-hmm. And some of them might be more high-skilled, using computers to design and build a lot of these units. So it's definitely something changing.
And I know you've researched the developing world. Is it seen as a viable and attractive option in, say, India and China, where there is so much growth taking place in the cities? Is it the wave of the future?
Yes. In fact, last year I was invited as part of a team to go to Haiti because they need a lot of housing units. And there's a lot of people, modular and manufactured housing producers from Miami coming in with proposals. The challenge is, again, twofold. First of all, there's a long history of experimenting on the low-income housing. And I think we have to be very careful of that. There's a long history of public housing in the United States of experimenting on low-income families. And I think we have to be very sensitive to that.
What do you see as the downside risk?
Well, frankly, a lot of these units are boxes. And like I said, you can make it as pretty as you want.
Yeah.
It's still a box. And how do we design? I think the creative talent is definitely there. Well, how do you design a modular unit that feels like a home?
Charles, last question, political question. The construction unions were among the biggest supporters of the Atlantic Yards project when it was going through the approval process because they were expecting all these jobs. Has he sold the unions down the river here with this new plan? And I know the opponents of Atlantic Yards are out there saying, if this is how he treats his friends, ..
Exactly. Well, I think there, at least initially, there's a sense of betrayal there, given that they, you went to all these stormy community board meetings that went on for years, and, you had the opposition with their chanting, and then you had the construction workers, these brawny guys taking up a lot of chairs, and they're chanting jobs, jobs, jobs. So there is a sense of betrayal, at least initially. On the other hand, when you're talking about building this, I mean, it is sort of an interesting opportunity for modular housing because he's going to build, 17 buildings there, and he's looking to for a factory in Long Island City where you would be, creating these mm-hmm. steel-framed boxes that would be stacked on top of each other. So it's not – he doesn't have to go out to Long Island. He doesn't have to go out to New Jersey. That's if you can make this cost-effective. The taller you go, the more you lose some of the gains mm-hmm. As opposed to regular construction.
Expensive to build high.
Right.
Charles Bagley, reporter at the New York Times, covering the many twists in the troubled Atlantic Yards development project. Asim Enam, professor of urbanism at Parsons, the New School of Design, familiar with prefab construction. Thank you both so much for joining
us
today.
Thank you,
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we go behind the ivy walls of the college admission process as many of you await the fateful moment for you or your child any day. Stay tuned.